This is the Thirsty Developer, episode number 41 for November 17th, 2008. Dog fooding with Team Foundation Server. Welcome, everyone, to Thirsty Developer. I'm Dave Bost.
And I'm Larry Clarkin.
Whoa. Oh, wait. We're back.
The banter's back, Dave.
The banter's back. So one of the reasons we're back is because we're finally together again.
Yes, it's been a while.
Yeah, so you've been out gallivanting, you know, surfing the waves in Hawaii, and I've kind of, you know, had some other things going on, but we finally had a chance to get back, get together, and bring the banter back. But we're at PDC.
Yeah, Dave, and one of the things that we heard from some people at PDC, we ran into a lot of folks who listen to The Thirsty Developer, and a couple of them mentioned, hey, you guys don't get together and talk anymore at the beginning of the show.
They're like, we like the banter. We like the blog of the week. Where's that at? So we're bringing the banter back. We're just trying something new to make it a little bit easier on us to get the show out on time and everything, to make it easier on people. But I guess people miss the banter.
Yeah, so we'll do a little bit of it, right? We'll kind of introduce the show, and then afterwards, maybe we'll talk about our favorite things at the PDC.
Yeah, that's right. So actually, in this interview, we had a chance to sit down with Stephanie Sod from the Team Foundation Server team at Redmond, who was talking to us about how Microsoft is using Team Foundation Server and all across their different product groups, even Windows and Office.
I was surprised at how many different groups within Microsoft are using it.
Yep.
Because that was one of the knocks on Team Foundation Server a few years ago. It's like, well, Microsoft's not even using it internally.
Right.
And it looks like pretty much just about everybody's using it at this point.
Well, they're getting there. Yeah, they're utilizing some sort of capabilities. They're not everything quite yet, but they're definitely moving all the development teams there. And it's like, to me, the ultimate test for Team Foundation Server probably is the Windows development team.
Absolutely.
So let's check it out. Let's listen in on with Stephanie Sod.
Hi, this is Larry Clark, and we're bringing you another episode recorded live at Microsoft's Professional Developer Conference here at the Los Angeles Convention Center in Los Angeles, California. I'm sitting here with Dave, who is, by the way, most people don't know this about him. He is the shortest Microsoft tenured MVP on Microsoft Teams system.
It's true.
And we're actually here with Stephanie, who's going to talk. We're going to talk a lot about Team system today.
Yep.
Stephanie, can you introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Stephanie Sod. I'm the group program manager for TFS, or one of them.
Okay, so TFS is Team Foundation Server, right?
Yes.
And we'll go through a little of the acronym here, because there's Microsoft Team system, which is kind of an umbrella name that includes parts of Visual Studio and also the Team Foundation Server.
That's right. So Visual Studio is the tool most people are familiar with. Visual Studio Team System is the set of tools for enterprise teams working together. So my way of explaining it is, if you're a guy and you're doing development, you should have Visual Studio. If you have friends, you're a guy with friends doing development together, you should have Visual Studio Team System. So Team Foundation Server is the tool that underlies that. It's a foundation, goes under, pretty easy to remember. That's where you find the source control, the build, the project management, the basic tools that a team needs to function together.
Yeah, and it's the back-end product that really ties everything together. The tools in Visual Studio,
yep,
you
right.
can use them without Team Foundation Server.
That's right.
But it really lights up the whole process, the whole application lifecycle management, if you've got the two, you know, working in concert, right?
That's right, exactly.
It's really about the collaboration.
That's right.
Right. So, I mean, it's funny when we talk to customers about Team System and Team Foundation Server, when they hear Team Foundation Server, they immediately think, oh, it's just a source control management system.
That's right. Yeah. A lot of people think of it that way. And the thing about Team Foundation Server that's so exceptional is it's bringing together the data from across the entire lifecycle. So one of the first things that I usually do when I'm showing people TFS is I'll show them the set of reports you can get out of the system. Imagine if you could go in and see how you're tracking against your project, and then you could drill through that and see how your builds were doing, and you could see your builds related to your testing, and your testing related to, you know, what kind of churn you had on the source base. So finally, for the first time in your life, hopefully, maybe not the first time in your life, but early on, you're seeing a view across the entire life cycle of how the product is doing.
Right.
Each of the point products will give you the right tools as a role user. So as a developer, it gives you an awesome set of tools, tester, so on. But Team Foundation Server brings all that information together. So it's not just a source control system. It's a project management, project planning and tracking for the whole group, reporting, build system, a whole suite of tools.
I will say
yep.
that it is a great source control system.
Yes.
And I have a lot of customers who are, you know, in the process of adopting it.
Yep.
And there is ROI, there's payback on just having, you know, a world-class source control system.
It is an awesome source
control
system.
And it is actually the proper way. If you're going to build up into the features of Team Foundation Server, you have to start with source control.
Yeah.
You know, you pretty much, if you're doing work items without source control, it's very hollow.
Yeah.
Will you let me use that word?
Sure.
Okay.
Of course. I think it's
the fundamental piece. And the other thing I think that a lot of people are confused about is you don't necessarily have to have Visual Studio Team System, one of the roles or the suite, to use Team Foundation Server.
You can. A lot of customers I know just love it. They get TFS and it allows them to get started with the source control, and they just have Visual Studio Pro or Standard. They plug right in. They get the license for TFS. That's a great way to use the system. A lot of people get started that way.
And then they will slowly build up into the roles once they see the value of the whole system or whatever.
Yeah, that's exactly what a lot of people do.
So one of the things we want to talk about, you did a great webcast last week for Microsoft internal employees and also some of our MVPs. And I think it was a public webcast, but it was a lot of information about how Microsoft uses Team Foundation Server. And it was such a great webcast. I emailed you before you were done speaking. And I think you replied and said, look, let me finish this one before you talk about the next interview.
Right.
We thought we'd share some of these amazing facts.
Sure.
So give us some of the amazing facts that we talked about last week.
Sure. I love to talk about the fun facts. My favorite fun fact is, I'll just start with the cool ones and then go back to the detailed ones. If you took all the source files we have in the developer division source control system and you laid them end to end, they would wrap the earth 2.5 times. So let me kind of go back and talk about raw stats on...
But a lot of those are comments, right?
probably the last
half time around is...
Maybe. There's over 14,000 people using our tools today. So I'm going to say roughly half the developers at Microsoft are 14,700 odd, if you want to get precise. And the way that we measure that is people who've checked in the last week. So this isn't like, you know, everybody and their dog that ever touched the source control system. That's
right.
Over 14,000 people.
This isn't just users in the... Yeah, this is active people
active
who've checked in
the system.
Last week. Cool.
We stress it in lots of different ways, too. You get in developer division, which is our biggest server, we got 2,700 people on one server. So that's like, it's a lot of people. 7 terabytes of data on one server. It's a I don't carry around in my backpack. That's a big server. And then we also see scale in other ways, too. Microsoft IT also uses it, and they've got a case where instead of having one project on one big server, they've got over 500 projects run on VS Team System. So it stresses us in a different way.
And that's just so everybody listening knows. Microsoft has an internal group that develops applications for us employees at Microsoft. And it's a lot of little applications as opposed to, you know, they're not building, you know, Visual Studio or something like that.
Yep.
They're, you know, building line of business applications just like most of our customers would.
Yeah.
And I think that if you look at the typical customer, they've got a few big apps.
Yeah.
But, you know, they have a lot of those little line of business applications running through their enterprise. So this is great examples of, we've got the scalability, we've got the number of users, we've got the amount of data in there. Most people shouldn't be concerned about that, it sounds like.
Yeah, the reason we dog food internally, there's a lot of reasons we dog food internally. So
you got to explain what dog food is.
Okay, sorry, thank you.
Which is hilarious.
The reason we use the product so heavily is, number one, it's just like you say, when we make a scalability promise or a recommendation to customers, we want to be sure we can stand behind it. Now, we do a lot of perf and stress testing in our own labs, but there's just no substitute for real testing, and that's one of our biggest reasons for dog fooding, which is expensive. The other reason is because we've got one of the largest development teams in the entire world, and we need the tools. So they're the best tools out there, and that's what we use.
Right. And dogfooding is the process whereby we use our own tools when they're in a beta or a CTP kind of phase, right?
Exactly.
And so before we started, turning on the microphone, you know, we talked with you about Visual Studio 2010.
Yep.
And there's a companion server update for Team Foundation Server. So Team Foundation Server 2010 probably.
Yeah.
You know, we asked you, are there people using it? And you got all excited.
Yeah.
And we stopped you and we said, let's turn on the recorder. So now is when you can get really excited and tell us, what are you guys doing with the next release that it was just announced at the PDC officially 2 days ago?
Well, what's so awesome is, you know, we're really believers in talking about what we've really done as opposed to making promises about the future. And I'm a real believer in that. The product that is labeled Visual Studio 2010 has been in dog fooding since 2007, those exact bits. We use them. The developer division is our already using 2010 with, like I said, 2,700 developers. So that's just an enormous version.
So the developer division, for people outside of Microsoft who don't know, those are the ones creating the tools and the languages and the frameworks.
Yeah, I can see I need to work on acronyms. But I want to say one of the new things that's coming is a radical change in the project management system that was actually mostly driven by user requests from Office. They really wanted to use TFS because it's a much better system for project planning. So around 2007, 2008, we rolled in a whole bunch of new changes for them, and they rolled it out, and all of Office is now dogfooding that. So the new version of Office that you see was planned with TFS. And Windows, similarly, they really like those changes, and so they are also using that version. So what you get in 2010 is something that is something we have a lot of confidence in, both the feature set that we've built and also the stability of the product.
I remember when Team System and Team Foundation Server were first released, a lot of people were saying that, can it scale? Can it handle the large project teams? Well, I would assume the Office team and the Windows development teams are pretty good indicators that, yes, TFS scales and does a damn good job of it.
Yeah, they're very big. Developer division is the division we have right now that uses every single aspect of the server. Windows and Office right now are using project planning, and they're very interested in moving to the new versions, but they also have a way of working that is very specific to them. So we're trying to balance right now between the set of features our users want and also supporting these major divisions and the very specific ways that they want to work. It's a really interesting piece of work for us.
Yeah, when you're building an operating system, there are rules that are a little different than if you're building a line of business application.
Yeah, and let me tell you, you don't want to be the guy who slows down the builds in the operating system team.
Right. That ship doesn't turn on a dime.
That's
it's a slow progression, but it sounds like they're taking advantage of it already.
That's right.
So do you want to jump back into some fun facts?
Yeah, sure.
Got any more?
More fun facts. Let's see. 7 terabytes of data. Over 500,000 work items for a developer division.
And a work item is anything.
Like a task,
right?
Or a bug. Yeah. So people ask me, like, can it handle 5 or 10? I say it can handle about 500,000 for sure. What other fun facts I can tell you? Well, let's keep talking, and I'll kind of see if I can interleave them as we go along.
Yeah, so 500,000 bugs or tasks.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the true scalability. And is that in one Team Foundation server?
That's all in one server.
So that's the developer division one?
Yeah, it's a developer division, like I said, 7 terabytes. I was trying to think of an analogy. I used to work at a Quantive a long time ago. It's an ad serving company. And we thought we had the biggest ad serving database, or we thought, in the world at the time. This was 5 or 6. Okay, it was 8 years ago. Man, I'm getting old. But that was 4 terabytes. So just our source control and work items for developer division is larger than the world's ad serving data in 2002.
Wow. So
yeah,
I kind of feel like I'm jumping around here, but
sure.
Could you kind of go talk about how Microsoft has Team Foundation Server sort of distributed around the world? Because I know, at least within the developer division, you have teams scattered all over the world, Hyderabad, India, and Denmark. I think we have some people there.
Yeah.
And I don't know if Fargo, North Dakota, is still up and running or not.
Yeah.
North Carolina, right?
I thought it might be kind of interesting to take the Team System team itself as a case study. What we have there is there's a team in Redmond, there's a team in North Carolina, there's another team in India, a very large team in India, and then a team in Hawaii that has recruiting.
Yeah. Wait a second.
Yeah.
I didn't know about that team.
Yeah, we do have a team in Hawaii.
I have to go look at those job openings, Larry.
there's a main server that's based in Redmond, and then each of the other teams has what's called a proxy. It's the way we recommend our customers do business as well. And so they synchronize the source control and work items to their proxy, and they're able to work against the proxy each day. So it's a very good way of working. MSIT also has a lot of distributed development. They have a team in Redmond and then a team in India, so they're constantly passing work back on.
So MSIT is the one that develops the internal applications.
That's right, MSIT develops all our internal applications in-house, and they also do distributed development. A lot of our customers do that as well. So what we're using internally is the same thing a lot of customers use. EDS is a great case study. They have, I think, 5 major distributed sites, and they, again, use the Team System, Central Source, and Proxy. Works great for distributed development.
Right. So how does that work exactly? Yeah. So the proxy server is essentially a local storage. Is that pulling everything down, or how's that synchronizing up with, like, sort of the main servers?
That's a great question I don't know the answer to, so you're probably going to have to edit that.
We'll follow up on that question.
Okay.
But it's essentially, it gives the local developers quicker access to the things they're working on at that point in time.
And yeah, exactly.
There's some synchronization process going on.
Yeah, the way to think about the proxy is that, so let's say I'm looking at Larry, and Larry's Redmond, and I'm looking at Dave, and Dave's North Carolina.
How did you get Redmond? Sorry.
The master server is sitting under Larry's desk in Redmond, and Dave, with your proxy, what you're doing is you're synchronizing those changes to a copy,
right.
But Larry's remains the master. So
yep.
It's a single master situation, and then you can work very swiftly without having to connect up to his Redmond, server under his desk or whatever, and then those changes are synchronized automatically via the proxy. There are other source control systems that use a multi-master system, but what we found is, so that would be like both you guys have the master, and then it has to try and synchronize at
right.
night. What we found is we're able to get the performance we want with the proxy server and avoid a lot of the problems of multi-master. So we've found this to work great for distributed development. We have a fairly large team doing this as well right now. Our Redmond team is is over 100 people just in VSTS. I'm not actually sure about the size of the overall developer division India team, but it's quite large. And like I said, we have multiple sites. The North Carolina team is also over 50 people. It's about 60, 70 right now.
Right, that's just VSTS. I mean, we have other teams that are working on the compiler, teams are working on the designers
right.
of Visual Studio. I mean, so we have multiple teams. This is just VSTS.
That's right.
Great. So any more fun facts pop up?
More fun facts.
I mean, that's pretty cool that we have this sort of, global distribution, project team, source control management. I mean, that's a hard job.
I can tell you, it's hard without my demos right in front of me, but I can tell you I'll tell you a story about something we were building. One of the things customers wanted was an iteration planning solution in the next release. So we started building one, and we liked it so much we started dogfooding it in the crew itself. We were like, oh, this is great. We should use it for our own sprint. So we started using it for our own sprint and rolling things in. Normally we roll things out for other teams to use, when we think they're ready. In this case, so many people came asking us for it that we had to start giving pre-release versions. So the iteration planning tools that you guys are going to get are now in use by, 20, 30. I've kind of lost track. I think it's around 30-odd teams, and they're constantly sending us feedback. So our biggest problem right now with customers using our stuff is sort of slowing them down, not speeding them up. Yeah.
So a quick question. You mentioned sprints. I mean, are you guys following Scrum, or is it a variation of Scrum?
That's another really cool question. Here's a fun fact. The different teams just inside Visual Studio Team System, most of them run on a slightly different process, but we're still able to maintain a really cool, a very deep view into what's happening across the whole group. The way VSTS runs... let me give you an example. Team Test runs sprints. They run about a 4-week sprint.
Okay.
Team Arc today, I believe, is also running 4-week sprints, although I'd have to verify. Inside TFS, we don't use the time-bound iterations. We use more of a feature-bound. So we work on a feature till it's done, and then we move it back into the branch. Because of the way Team System has central reporting, it's possible for each of the teams to have their own process. But because we're all reporting tasks and progress in the same way, our leadership team can look at the progress across the whole team every 6 weeks and still have a great conversation with each other about progress and risks.
And that's the dashboard nirvana that we've always wanted, right?
Yeah.
Is even though I've got all these little teams,
yeah.
and I might have hyper-accurate status on any of those, I could never get a full view of where I'm at in the project.
Yeah, one of the neat things about Dev 10 is this this cross-project reporting, and a great reporting system gives you the ability to, Dave, you can take your team and have it run the way you want, and same with you, Larry, but we can all together look at the progress of the overall project without being restricted by sort of artificial red tape, having to all run the same way.
So can we ask about new features in the product?
You can, but I don't know how much time we have.
Well, specifically, kind of like, what's the two or three best, and I'll do the asterisk for you.
Okay.
That, this is, right now we're in a CTP
right.
with Visual Studio 2010.
Yeah.
Offer does not apply to, may not be valid in the states of Washington and Oregon. That some of these features may be dropped at some point, but tell me
sure.
what are Stephanie's favorite features.
2010, I have to tell you, it's just the coolest release. Let me kind of take you guys on a tour, and I'll talk about some of my favorite stuff. Let me start first with like a nerdy developer feature. Imagine, if you will, you get some bug from some tester, and the tester says, hey, here's a bug. I want you to go and find it. But you have no idea what they were doing on their machine. Imagine if as the tester was finding the bug, in the background, it was recording what was happening on his machine at a stack trace level. And then when he sent you the bug automatically attached the stack trace, which you then open up, replay in the debugger, and see at exactly what happened. And as it was replaying, you had video where you could watch what he was doing on the screen. And the repro steps were there as well as it captured the system information of his machine.
So,
that would be really
so now
cool.
blame the user has gone down, you know, to the next level, right?
It's not blame the user. We call it...
Big Brother?
No, we don't call it Big Brother. We call it never have a no repro again.
Right, right. Yeah, so, I sat in Cameron's and Doug's session the other day where they were showing the new features and some of the VSTS and around testing and architecture. Yeah. And they showed how the recording that. Actually, I kind of had a more of a technical question behind that. Like,
sure.
is that something the tester has to set up? Are they always running in record mode? And how do the recordings kind of clean themselves up? Is it a matter of?
Oh yeah.
Is it a matter of if the test succeeds, go ahead, dump that video. We don't need to save it. If there's an exception, we replay it. How does that work exactly?
Well, the first thing I'll say is that I actually haven't played with this feature in a couple of months. So
I don't mean to put you on the spot.
Yeah, I'll try and answer based on what I remember. I'll tell you what I know, and then I'll tell you who to talk to. What I know is that the recording is a continuous recording in the background, so it will continuously loop. So what that means is it'll record and then it'll re-record over itself. So it's not just a massively growing file.
Right.
It's also configurable, so the tester can go in and can change whether or not they want that on or off. Because it will affect the. As the tester as you move through that.
Sure. And actually, for me, looking at it from a developer standpoint, I thought it was incredible in the sense that it's, like I said, it's capturing the stack trace.
Yeah.
So I can bring it into the Visual Studio debugger, and I can actually analyze all the different local variables and all my my program variables and see exactly what the statuses were and even drill down even further into, like, the exception tracing and see what the actual error was, because maybe I didn't blow up the error correctly to show what the actual error was, but I can if I drill down to the exception stack, I can see exactly what it was and look at what all the variables were. I mean, that's
cool.
I can't imagine how much time that's going to save on just tracking these bugs.
It's so
cool.
Let's
get to another feature, though.
All right. Well, I thought I'll kind of take you guys on a tour of my favorite things. So we've been in the developer world. Let's hop around the corner and go talk about testers. One of my favorite features in testing now is there's a brand new comprehensive test case management system. But my very favorite feature is the manual test runner feature. So you'd say you take a test case and you open it up and you say run, and this thing pops up. It's going to show you on the left-hand side of your screen, it will show you a test runner. All the steps that you need to go through, and as you walk through, you can say whether the test passed or failed. It is manually doing or automatically doing all the video recording and the stack trace in the background for you. You can even annotate the video files. As you go through, you can say whether something passed or failed. You can file a bug, and it'll automatically attach the information about the test steps, all that information that the developer is looking for. That's just one of my favorite features, that manual test runner. And then once you're done, you can stop and then even replay back through it to see that test case. So it's helping you build up a library of recorded test cases that you can replay. Well, that's just really cool.
Right, that is cool.
Let's see. A couple other features. So we've talked about development, testing, architecture, kind of stepping back a bit. There's some fabulous, just awesome new features in the architecture SKU. They now have, for the first time, a really nice story around design for components. So you can do component design at a high level, break down and do sequence design, use case design. They have a really neat set of visual designers in the product that are actually then linked through to code. That's something you guys have got to check out. On project management, we have just a really comprehensive new set of features there. End-to-end traceability, reporting, Excel reporting, a brand new warehouse, and a great new agile iteration planning and tracking set of features there. And then just to kind of wrap up, the source control system also has a ton of great new features in there that you guys would want to take a look at. My favorite there is probably the branch visualization in Merge. So you can actually take a look at branches and watch how changes move across the branches.
What about cherry-picking the Merge?
What about cherry-picking? How do you mean?
That, you know, you can actually, if you branched, you don't have to bring the whole branch over. You can actually bring specific, you know, features of it.
Yeah.
Did that make it, or?
Cherry picking. I don't know the answer to that question.
Okay.
I have to think about it.
Because, you know, oftentimes you're branching for a feature, and you may have parts of it that are complete, but, you know, you don't necessarily need to bring everything over.
Yep.
There may be baggage in there that you want to just, like, leave in that other branch, so.
I don't actually know the answer
All
to
right.
that.
All right. So we'll find somebody else to ask before the end of the conference.
Yeah.
So I think you may have talked about this with Manuel. Isn't there's now a way to kind of record UI and play that back as a regression test?
Yes, that same manual test runner I talked about as your what we had in the past was we had that for web-based UI, so you could walk through a website and then replay that. And we now have that same what we call automation for navigation, that replay for the Windows client, which is a very popular feature with customers.
So this one actually tracks mouse movements and does, I mean, it actually records all the UI changes that the user's making. Is that how it works?
Yes, that's right.
Because the web was like, that was capturing just your postback request. Was that correct? As opposed to like, if I hover a mouse, this like a tooltip pop up and stuff like that. Can we get down to that granular of a level?
I don't know the answer to that question.
Or is it just like event firing and stuff?
I mean, these
are tricky things. I mean, it's, I know it's, like you said, it's like one of the top requested features, and now we're seeing it in the product as it's evolving and maturing and stuff.
I know when they do the recording, the recording's not just at the UI layer. So let's say you're to move a button 2 pixels to the right or the left, it will still continue to work. But I don't know the answer about the level of the
recording. It's funny because people ask about these features. They don't understand how complicated it is to build them, you know?
Yeah, sure.
I always ask myself, okay, if you're a developer and you were to build that, how would you do it? And they sit there and go,
I don't know.
Well, that's really interesting. I never thought about that. Like you said, if you move a button over 2 pixels, then it invalidates the test, essentially.
Right.
All right, so what else? Come on, we got more.
That's probably my top five list. I could keep going for a while, but if I kind of give you my tour, Dev, that... testing the new manual test runner.
What about TFS? I mean, Brian Harry had a talk the other day.
Sure. Let's see. In TFS, there's so many cool new features. So I can just kind of take you through.
Yeah.
Let's start with...
You know what? Let's go on another tour.
What'd you say?
Let's go on another tour.
Okay. let me talk about some of the specifics in the project management system, because that's probably what I know the best. What you'll see there, I kind of ran through it pretty quickly, but some features, traceability. For the first time, a ton of requests for hierarchy, or what users say is, I'd like to have a set of requirements and then break them down into tasks. So you'll see that in the new version. You can work with it in the client. You'll also see in the web client, you can get hierarchy. Open those in Excel and see the hierarchy. Save things, run them back. Project has also been enhanced, so the project client works great with that hierarchy system. So you can open up and in project, schedule out your tasks. Project will also now, for the first time, you can put in like a real project plan with predecessor and successor relationships. And if you save that back to the server, it'll save those relationships so you can open up the project plan again. It's all saved.
Cool.
That's really nice. The reporting system is designed to work really well with that traceability. So you can see very nice roll-ups. So for the first time, you can get roll-up reporting on how your whole project is doing. We just look at it at the high level and roll up all the tasks beneath it and report on that. I also really like... I really like the Excel reporting feature. It's kind of one of my favorites. You can go in and right-click on a query and then open that query in Excel. And that will automatically link up, bind to the cube, pull through all your data, set up a set of pivot tables, and then give you a set of graphs. So it's just super fast.
Right.
It takes about 2 minutes to construct a really nice, quick Excel report. And that's going to work really nicely with another cool feature we've got coming, which is Moss-based dashboards. You have these really neat dashboards built on top of Moss where you can look at all these different Excel reports. And the nice thing about that is for the first time you get a dashboard that you can customize really quickly because it's so easy to customize those Excel-based reports.
Right.
Create new ones, customize them. That's awesome.
That's cool. Yeah,
I think the team has done a really nice job with that set of features.
Right.
So over on the source control and build side of the house, there's a couple of my favorite features I'd point out. On the build side, probably my two favorite ones are distributed build, which is a more broad way of saying it would be Windows Workflow Foundation integration for build. So I think the team's done a really good job on this. You can now go in and design your build using Windows Workflow Foundation.
Really?
Do things like split it. So you could take the build and build x86 on one server and x64 on another server.
Oh, very cool.
And you can use Windows Workflow to also split do Japanese on one server, Inu, and then bring it all together. So it's really nice. The other thing that they did that I really like is the gated check-in. So this is, let's say you want to ensure the quality of your builds. One way you could do that is if you check in an automated set of tests run, so that it tests to make sure that your code builds, that all the unit tests against it pass, and if it doesn't work, then it kicks out your check-in. So that's this new gated check-in system. That's something that we had internally for a long time, or something similar, and now it's in the product, so customers.
So essentially,
will be
you can't break the build.
That's right.
It won't allow you to.
Well, you can't break a build. I wouldn't say it that strongly.
That was on Doug's slide the other day.
You never worked with me, Dave. I can break builds in ways you can't imagine.
Yes.
But the gated check-in is supposed to help protect from breaking the build.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So now we're at PDC, and the PDC attendees got the bits. People who didn't attend the PDC, how can they see some of these new features? How can they start playing with them?
I think there's two ways to do it that are the best. Number one, I think the most fun is always to pick up the product and play with it for yourself. So you can get access to the new CTP version. There's a set of walkthroughs that ship with it that'll take you through all the major new features.
And this is available on MSDN?
Yep, it's available. The other thing that I think would be great to take a look at is the talks, because they're all posted to the web. There are about 12 talks on VSTS here at PDC, and they're all available publicly. And
yeah, those are up on Channel 9, I believe.
Yep.
Yeah,
so cool. I think that'd be a great thing to take a look at.
Great. Right. So I have to ask this question. Since we are PDC, yeah. I know you've been focusing on Team System and you know, promoting the product and talking to customers and developers and stuff. Outside of Team System, what's the coolest thing you've seen at PDC this week?
Windows
Cloud Computing? Yeah. So Windows Cloud Computing, though, how do you pronounce that name?
Azure.
We got this big, you know, 40-50 foot banner behind
us.
Yeah,
so. I'm looking at a big banner. Yep.
Great. So, is there anything else you like to? You got a blog you want to let
people
to or anything?
Yeah, sure. People can check out the blog. Just look for Stephanie Saad, and there's a blog with lots of information about TFS.
Right. Great. Well, thanks, Stephanie, for being on Thirsty Developer. We appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.
So yeah, so there was a lot going on at PDC. As you could tell, we recorded that interview right in sort of the what they call the big room where everything was going on, all the different partners and product groups where they're kind of showing off all their nice new gadgetry, talk about the new technologies. We're sitting right in the Windows Azure section, so there's a lot of buzz, a lot of just cool things going on around us.
Yeah, and it was an interesting area because Open Spaces was just a few feet away. Our friends, Chris and Keith from the Deep Fried Bites
yep.
podcast were recording, like 20, 30 feet away from us.
Yep, that's right.
But yeah, that was a great interview with Stephanie. We appreciate her time. This is actually the second of three interviews that we recorded at PDC. We've got another one for next week that's going to be focusing on Windows Mobile, just to give everybody a sneak, sneak peek at that one. But Dave, I have to ask you, what was your favorite part of PDC?
Oh, my gosh. Well, I have to be honest with you, man. I think I'm still recovering from PDC. I mean, we, at PDC, as you know, we announced both, on the first day, the keynote was all about Windows Azure, the Azure Services platform. So I was actually pretty excited about that because I actually, being an internal employee at Microsoft, I was kind of, keeping my distance from our announcements around cloud computing and stuff just because I knew it was coming, but there's so much more that me personally needed to focus on about other products that I need to worry about, like Visual Studio 2008 and Silverlight and WPF, and just, we've announced so many new products in such a short time period. Me as an evangelist need to keep up, and this was just another thing, and now that they've announced it, I'm really excited about where we're going with the cloud computing and really trying to wrap my arms, personally around what that all means. And then also with Windows 7, you just installed Windows 7 on your laptop.
It's running on the M1330 right now.
So you got that up and running. So we've got a lot of this cool stuff. And so, I mean, that's what I like about PDC is it really gets me excited about what's next, right? So Windows Azure, huge announcement. Windows 7, huge announcement. But also just all the breakout sessions around, I attended sessions on, what's next with Visual Studio Team System 2010. Doug Sutton and Cameron Skinner did a great session on that. What's the WPF roadmap, some of our announcements around ASP.NET and jQuery and sort of the next release of ASP.NET Ajax. I think those were some of my favorite sessions. But what I would tell everybody is to actually go out. You can view every single session from PDC, kind of attend the conference virtually, and this is fantastic. I mean, you can go on to MicrosoftPDC.com and click, there's like a view the sessions link, and it'll take you to kind of a smorgasbord of all the sessions that they had at PDC, and you can view them at your leisure. And I'm still catching up. I'm still watching sessions.
And it's absolutely fantastic that, all those sessions are there. But, Dave, I really like the in-person experience. I loved being at PDC. I think that, I wouldn't have traded that for the world. One of the nice things is that Microsoft, the teams across the United States at least, are putting together an event that's going to allow us to bring part of the best of the things of the PDC into like 13 cities across the U.S.
Right. That's the idea. So what's going on is that not everybody's able to go to the PDC. We know that, right? So we had like 6,000 of our closest friends from all over the world come to PDC with us, but there's so many more out there that didn't get a chance to come to PDC. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to bring the PDC to everyone else. So what we're doing is we're taking what we consider sort of the best of PDC content and bringing that out to 11 cities across the United States, places like Houston, Orlando, San Francisco, Chicago, New York, and so on and so forth. But essentially go to msdndevcon.com. MSDNDevCon.com, MSDNDevCon.com, to get more details about the actual MSDN Developers Conference that's coming to your city, closest to you, hopefully.
Yeah, and we'll be at the Chicago event on January 13th. You know, that's local to us. But again, it's pretty much, you know, all over the U.S. We're trying to give as much of the country love as possible. If you're listening outside the United States, what I would commend to you is reach out to your local Microsoft evangelist or your local Microsoft office and see if they're having any local events to bring some of the best PDC content to your local area. But in the United States, we're doing the MSDN Developer Conference. And I know we have a lot of listeners outside the United States, and I don't want to be one of these podcasts. Come see us in Chicago. But
well, if they can. I mean, still they can go to, you know, the MicrosoftPDC.com site and view the sessions directly from PDC as well. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but it should be a good time. You're going to be speaking on cloud services in Chicago, and I'm going to be speaking, I can't remember, I think WPF and also ASP.NET and jQuery and stuff. So, yeah, it should be a good time. I'm really looking forward to it.
Great day. Should we wrap up with a blog you should know?
Absolutely. You know what, Larry? I'm going to let you go first. Why don't you use that Windows 7 laptop you have over there with the fancy little, you know, UI graphical nuances that we got with the new taskbar and such. It's so fancy. Tell me the blog you should know.
So, Dave, you mentioned that I've got Windows 7 on my laptop now, and I'm experiencing it, you know, firsthand for the first time on a new piece of hardware that's mine. One of the most interesting blogs, the one I started reading a couple of months ago when they launched it, was Engineering Windows 7. That's at blogs.msdn.com/e7. And it is specifically blog topics, not about necessarily the user interface and some of the, you know, the nice new features of it, but the changes that they made between Vista and Windows 7 to increase that great experience that they started with in Windows Vista. And it's a product team blog. They blog pretty much, you know, several times a week, you know, so it's definitely not a blog that you're going to get bored with. And they've got some really detailed articles in there. So I would check that out at blogs.msdn.com/e7.
Yeah, so basically anything, you know, new around Windows 7, you should find it there, right?
Yep.
So my blog, you should know, is actually what, you know, has to do with our talks around Windows Azure and the announcements we had at PDC. And actually, last week, I actually spoke at the Chippewa Valley Code Camp up in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. And we had a great turnout up there. And actually, I spoke on kind of a lap around Windows Azure and the Azure Services platform. And one of the sort of the points that I went out to, one of the blogs that I was kind of following and keeping up to, you know, up to date on the information around, you know, building on top of the Windows Azure platform and stuff, is actually Steve Marks's blog. Steve Marks is actually a program manager on the Windows Azure team out in Redmond, and he has a blog at blog.smarks.com, as in Steve Marks, you know, Smarks is his alias, blog.smarks.com. And so he's blogging on everything to do with Windows Azure development or developing on top of Windows Azure. And he actually has, he also had some sessions at the PDC, and one of his sessions was kind of like, developing for the Windows Azure platform. So kind of like, you know, what does a developer have to do to build on top of his platform? He has a link to his session, you know. So that's actually one of the things I learned quite a bit from after PDC, because I didn't actually get to check his session out in person, is to actually go back and review his session online. So go to blog.smarks.com, and actually that's a good starting point to start learning how to build on top of the Azure platform. So that's one of the blogs I've been paying attention to a lot lately.
Great.
So that's it, Larry. There's our banter for the first time in a long time. So I think with that, Larry, I think we'll call it a day. So the banter's back, man. Did it hurt?
Nope.
It felt pretty good, man. It felt good to go back with the microphone in hand. And
it's always nice to talk to you, Dave. Yeah, we have so much to catch up on,
course.
You know?
Yeah.
I got to tell you about my vacation.
Yeah.
Let's do that off the air.
Okay, we'll do it off the air. So with that, everybody, thanks for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to The Thirsty Developer. This podcast is available on the Zune Marketplace and the iTunes Music Store. You can also find a link to the feed at thirstydeveloper.com. For general comments on the show or to suggest a topic, send an email to thirstydeveloper@live.com.
Did it hurt?
No. But I forgot what we're supposed to do at this point. Maybe we should just say goodbye.